you in the 06010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Good Wednesday morning to you. Phil Yates, Mike Clay sitting in for Matthew Berry. Hello, Michael.
How's it going, my friend?
It's good.
Quiet morning, right?
Yeah,
nothing going
happening
on
in the NFL, so we'll probably just spend the next 60 minutes reviewing Daniel's latest game of D&D. Hello, Daniel. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you doing?
I am doing well, and Stefania Bell, as always, is here as well. And we do have a busy morning. Hello, Stefania. We have a very busy morning on our hands. And Mike alluded to it in sarcasm. But we're going to have a lot of football conversations about rankings and other pieces of injury updates. But we did have some news break this morning. So we're going to get you caught up. And I want to remind people that we do this show. So for those of you that are listening to the audio version in podcast form, we do this show at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So yep. News changes and it can happen very fast. So as of 10:01, which is what it is right now, here's what we know around the NFL as it relates to COVID-19 this morning. Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore has tested positive for COVID-19. Gilmore did play in the game on Monday night. He, of course, did travel with the team. That's how he played in the game on Monday night. He is now the third member of the Patriots roster, joining Cam Newton and practice squad defensive tackle Bill Murray to be on the COVID-19 list. The Patriots have shut down their facility for the day. They are not practicing today. As of right now, there are no plans to adjust the game with the Broncos on Sunday, but as of right now is the operative word in that statement. We also have news from Diana Rossini that the Titans had additional positive COVID-19 tests this morning. The Titans had received 2 days of back-to-back good news because they had zero new positive tests. As a result of this positive test, the Titans are now not able to open their facility back up today, Wednesday. That could put Sunday's game against the Bills in flux. We'll have to wait and see on that. But as we know, the NFL is going to have to be very nimble with this schedule going forward. One more piece of COVID-19 related news. The Raiders have a new positive test. They actually placed Maurice Hurst, their defensive tackle, on the reserve COVID-19 list yesterday. Just because he was placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, it does not mean that he had a positive test. But now we have two players that will end up on the reserve COVID-19 list. This is the busiest morning we've had in terms of COVID updates, I would say, around the NFL. I don't want to make too many statements that are declarative or definitive. But obviously, the NFL feared mornings like this, Mike. And I think there are a lot of people that are sort of walking on eggshells this morning.
No question about it. And again, like you, I don't want to jump to conclusions or make any, grand statements about what you should do to, perhaps adjust your roster. Obviously, people are listening to the show for that reason.
Right.
Because we don't know, right? There could be some cancellations here or there. At this point, we just need to see how this plays out over the next couple of days and be prepared for the possibility that some games are postponed or canceled or there's a forfeiture, which could always be on the table. We'll obviously keep an eye on that. So, let's just let this play out and hopefully everyone gets healthy. And that's the most important thing right now.
A lot of people obviously had to make plans for their Titans players this past weekend when their game was postponed. Hopefully you already have insulated your roster. If not, do it again because they or maybe the Bills, who they are scheduled to play on Sunday, might not be available this upcoming week. We just don't know. Before we spin to more football news, I just want to make sure, is there any ground that we didn't cover there, Stefania, that you think is imperative to mention based off the information we have right now?
I do think there's one important thing. I spoke with Mike Reese this morning, and Stephon Gilmore was on the plane that was associated with the close contacts with Cam. If you recall, the Patriots took two planes to Kansas City out of a precautionary measure, trying to keep folks who potentially were exposed via close contact to Cam separate. Now, obviously, it doesn't keep them separate in the locker room or the field, et cetera. But I think it's interesting because it does suggest that there may be a connection there between those two. So obviously, the league will be paying close attention to see if this is just one. The next few days will be very telling, or if there were others who will be linked to that first positive.
All I can say is fingers crossed right now. Fingers
absolutely
crossed because yeah. This is a football story, but it's a health and wellness story for people around the NFL. Before we get to the other big news of the morning, we We want to say thank you and remind that the Fantasy Focus virtual events, which we had our second of two last night, are presented by Geico. Geico is now offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. Visit geico.com for more. And Marathon, fueling the American spirit. A lot of fun last night, a lot of questions answered. So for all of you that took the time to hang out with us for an hour virtually, very, very, very much appreciated. The loyalty of the 06010 never ceases to amaze us here on the podcast. And another thing that really never ceases to amaze me, at least, is how much change there is at quarterback for the Washington football team, as it has now been announced by the team that Dwayne Haskins is no longer the starting quarterback for the Washington football team. It is instead Kyle Allen. As a matter of fact, Dwayne Haskins is no longer the starting quarterback or the backup quarterback. He's the backup to the backup, which is like the equivalent of being the assistant to the regional manager. As Kyle Allen's a starter, and Alex Smith, maybe a feel-good element of this story, is now your backup quarterback in Washington. Mike, no one in competitive leagues was starting Dwayne Haskins as their solo quarterback. I'm not even sure he was a lock-in starter. He probably wasn't in two quarterback leagues. I mean, that's how brutal the offense has been. But so let's not focus on Dwayne Haskins so much. Let's focus in on what it could mean for Terry McLaurin. And also, I guess, Antonio Gibson?
Yeah, it could have some slight implications. I was looking into Kyle Allen's splits last season, kind of to see where he distributed the ball. And in terms of like target share to the tight end, it wasn't much different. Obviously, he threw the ball to Christian McCaffrey a ton in that Carolina offense. But look, to your former point, I mean, you're right. Allen, 19 total touchdowns last season. He took over in week three, 16 interceptions, 13 fumbles. He was QB 20 during his 12 active weeks. So if you're looking for, look, maybe I could find a solution to my quarterback problems, I don't think Kyle Allen will be that. But one thing he did do well is, again, he got the ball to Christian McCaffrey.
Like that.
He'll get the ball to Antonio Gibson, most likely. He got the ball to not only DJ Moore, who was terrific in fantasy, but also Curtis Samuel had 6 touchdowns, and his air yard share was very similar to DJ Moore. He was pretty productive as well. So we like that for Terry McLaurin. And I think just based on his usage, right, in terms of routes run and target share so far, that maybe this is what Logan Thomas needed, right? You know, I'm putting on my Matthew Berry hat here. That was this guy all offseason. Obviously, he couldn't be here to break down this quarterback change for his favorite team. But nonetheless, maybe this is what gets more on-target throws to Logan Thomas and propels him forward. So if you're shaky at quarterback, Allen's not the answer. If you're shaky at tight end, maybe Logan Thomas can be, because the volume has been there. He's elite in terms of OFP this year, right? The opportunity has been there. So that's all I'm saying. If you're really in rough shape and you want a lottery ticket at tight end, I think you could hang tight on Logan Thomas.
Yeah, so I think the good news is if you have Antonio Gibson or Terry McLaurin, I don't think their value nosedives at all, as you just said. And maybe there's a chance that Logan Thomas emerges. And because of some recent tight end injuries, not that O.J. Howard was a popular tight end target, but because of some recent tight end injuries, and also because of the fact that, as we know, you may be searching for a tight end or a wide receiver or running back or a quarterback at the last minute each and every week, it is worth wondering whether Logan Thomas could be a reasonable insurance policy and potentially, eventually, a starter. We'll get into the rankings a little bit more and certainly throughout the next few days as it pertains to this story. But I also think there's a cool feel-good part of it. And I don't want to say that Dwayne Haskins losing his job is cool, but I admire, obviously, the courage and the determination and the will of Alex Smith. And Stefania, I do want to ask you, as you, of course, are the author, you are the person behind Project 11, as well, along with Alex Smith and his family. You know, I sit there and I think to myself, the fact that he's the backup means he's now one snap away from playing in an NFL game again. And part of me wondered if he would ever do that. And even as recently as him being a member of the 53-man roster, we're talking about Alex Smith potentially playing soon. Like, is this real? Would this be something that could actually happen for the Washington football team?
It is. And I think, you know, even as much as I was saying in the preseason that I believed that he could, you know, he was medically cleared, and I've watched him work his way back. So I have belief in Alex Smith. But of course, you know, circumstances being what they are, it wasn't clear that whether there would ever actually be an opportunity. And as you say, you don't wish any ill will towards Kyle Allen, but just knowing that there's the confidence there in Washington that he could step on the field should he be called upon to do so. And You know, this guy is nothing if not resilient. I mean, I think that's an understatement. And we've seen him in difficult situations before. He's certainly got the mental toughness to be able to handle whatever's thrown at him. So let's put it this way. If his number is called, if number 11 is called, number 11 will be ready.
All right. That's really, really fascinating. And just, you know, good on Alex Smith. We continue to find it a very inspiring story that he can come this far, less than 2 years away from shattering his leg. Just an impressive comeback in so many ways by Alex Smith. We do have a bunch of injury updates to get to, so we'll go right back to Stefania. And the Steelers were on a bye this past week, Stefania. Deontay Johnson had some extra time as a result of that to recover from his concussion. Where is he at now as we begin the practice week for the Steelers, who are set to resume their play this Sunday?
Well, Mike Tomlin made it nice and clear that he was out of the concussion protocol and would be fully practicing this week. And this is one of those situations where the extra time may have helped them. You know, he may have been cleared to play. We don't know, because he didn't have to get that far and announce it to us. But it certainly gives him, as you said, the extra cushion of time, not only for recovery, but getting back in practice and reconditioning. So you have to feel good about Deontay Johnson this week.
It's good news there. And of course, Mike will tell you they're playing against the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday, a defense that has been tighter against wide receivers this year than they have been for a lot of years in a row. But Deontay Johnson, prior to week three, I believe he was the only player in weeks one and two with 10 or more targets in each of those two games. He's been volume heavy, I should say, and a really talented player. So it's good news for those that have been rostering Deontay Johnson.
No question. Still leads the Steelers in targets despite missing most of that week three game. You mentioned that the Eagles, you know, better against wide receivers. Really, just one guy has been Darius Slay. I think actually he will shadow Johnson in this game. You might wonder, why not Juju Smith-Schuster? Well, he's primarily in the slot. Johnson's on the outside. Slay lines up on the outside. So tough matchup, obviously, for him. But the volume has been so good. It's a, you know, obviously a pass-first offense, high-scoring offense. So you're still starting him, but maybe shy away in DFS.
So A.J. Brown of the Titans is an interesting injury update for a couple of reasons, Stefania. Obviously, because it's a big story, right? He's got a bone bruise on his knee. I'm not sure if I'm phrasing that properly. But as we know, the Titans, they're not practicing today. But what do we know? I mean, do we have even an update on where he's at?
Well, Mike Vrabel had said that there was a chance that A.J. Brown would practice today, but that was contingent on the facility being open. And, you know, again, this is an injury situation where the downtime may have been beneficial for A.J. Brown, because with a bone bruise, one of the most important things is just not overloading it. So the additional time may have been helpful for him, but you have to consider the other part, which is getting back into football shape. Remember, he was injured in week one, so he hasn't been on a football field in approximately a month, and this was going to be his first day back getting into practice, potentially, obviously now delayed.
All right, so we're going to get into this game more tomorrow, because A.J. Brown and the Titans are scheduled to face the Buffalo Bills, and there's an interesting cornerback wide receiver matchup that we could see potentially involving A.J. Brown if he returns on Sunday, and if the game is played on Sunday. A pair of running backs, Stefania, that have missed some time and that are now scheduled to return this week, it sounds like. Some good news both for Philip Lindsay and Cam Akers in Los Angeles.
Right. I love it when the coaches are very straightforward and tell you, yes, we expect these players back. And Vic Fangio said that he expects Philip Lindsay to play in week five, and actually said that Lindsay felt mentally and physically ready to go, but he didn't want to put him in a game with no practice. Remember, they played Thursday night last week, so those practices were all walkthroughs, and he didn't really get to test the toe. So they'll be able to see him in practice and confirm their opinion that he should be able to play. Worth noting, they play the Patriots this week, so, you know, stay tuned. Cam Akers for the Rams had that very painful rib cartilage injury, but Sean McVay said he expected to see him back in practice this week as well. So hopefully he gets back, and then we'll see how he tolerates getting back to work.
All right, that's good news for them. Maybe not such great news for fantasy football, right? I mean, I don't know that Melvin Gordon's value is depressed too much with Philip Lindsay, but Cam Akers, one more wrench into the already difficult to assess Rams backfield here, Mike. So Matthew and I were having this conversation on Monday's show. We're following the Ravens and the Rams backfields back to back. And the guy, I don't know. He has a bit more confidence in the Rams backfield than I do in terms of being predictable. And I think I might get to the point where if I can afford to, I'd punt on them. Are you that far with the Rams backfield, or are you willing to sort of stake your claim to one or two of those guys?
I have all three of those guys on various rosters, and I don't know what to do. I mean, at least it was a little easier with just Brown and Henderson. You felt like, you know, there's only so many to go around. They'll both be utilized. Maybe one of them scores. With Akers in there, I mean, he was the second round pick, right? They want to work him into this offense. So barring a situation where Malcolm Brown just kind of steps all the way back to where he's been the past couple of years and doesn't play much,
right,
it's going to be hard to know. And I think Sean McVay legitimately is just going to play the quote-unquote hot hand, right? We saw it last week. Darrell Henderson was maybe the best running back in the NFL weeks 2 and 3 and took a back seat to Malcolm Brown again because Malcolm Brown came out and played well. So I'm with you on this one. It's really hard to predict. I don't know what direction to go, and I'd like to have a little upside on my bench, but I don't feel great starting these guys. And by the way, Akers and Lindsey, you don't want to obviously start them this week. Leave them on your bench for now.
Yeah, and we'll see, of course, if the Broncos do play, as they are scheduled to play the Patriots on Sunday in Foxborough. Sean McVay cares very much about us in the sense that he's awesome and transparent with injuries. Sean McVay is also a football coach, and if he's going to do something that's best for his team, that may involve riding the hot hand within the course of the game. Sam Darnold, Stefania, got pummeled last Thursday night, got back into the game. I thought it was an incredible showing of toughness. I don't know if it was responsible or not, but that's really not my job to decide. But it sounds like his shoulder issue is still going to be a problem going into week 5.
Right. Sam says he thinks he'd like to play this weekend against Arizona, but it remains to be seen whether he can throw effectively. You know, one of the things that happens when you get taken out of your quarterback with a potential shoulder injury, so they obviously evaluated him in the locker room, felt that he was, you know, safe to return to play. And obviously he had to demonstrate he could throw the ball. And I think we even talked about it the day after the game. He was heaving the ball down the field, and the fact that he could make throws that were deep showed you that there was nothing structurally that was significantly wrong. That being said, he has now been reported to have an AC sprain. And I think I said on the podcast the day after, there's like three things that can happen to a quarterback when you get taken down and you land on the point of your shoulder. And he had his arm pinned. It's an AC sprain, a rotator cuff bruise, or a broken clavicle. AC sprain it is. The issue is the day after the game, when you have more swelling and now you have time, you have no adrenaline, that's when the injury really manifests itself. So we'll see if he can get back in practice today, and can he make the throws that he was able to make when he still had the adrenaline going?
Mike, I care about Sam Darnold's wellness. I'm not sure it matters, because if you're starting a Jets wide receiver, well, I suppose Jamison Crowder could be started. But that's it. I mean, that's it. Remember Chris Herndon?
You can't start Herndon.
Remember him? He was good. Remember, he was good back
as
a rookie.
Yeah, I definitely didn't hype him up all offseason. Never.
You know who else did? Everybody with the pulse, who's smart and who likes good offensive players.
We should have known better, right, with this offense. By the way, shout out Jeff Smith, who was 1% rostered in Showdown Captain Leagues last Thursday. I was in that 1%, but I got pretty much everything else wrong, so didn't win anything. But anyway, that was interesting, right?
I mean, former BC Eagles state.
Yes, absolutely. But impressive to come off IR like that. He only played, what, he had 13 targets last year, steps into that huge role. So
yeah.
I don't know if he'll be with Breshad Perriman back. I don't think he's going to be a consistent fantasy asset, but what a job by him in that game.
Yeah, I would think, and because I do want to be serious here for a second, if Joe Flacco starts in place of Sam Darnold, I do think it is a hit to Jamison Crowder's value. I think most people were probably utilizing Jamison Crowder as either a flex consideration or a third wide receiver in three wide receiver leagues. Probably going to end up being around that level of value for me, even with Joe Flacco, because the targets are all funneling to Jamison Crowder when he's healthy. And he is a good player. He is a good, shifty, nifty wide receiver. A couple of Thursday night football updates, Stefania. The Bucs play, of course, the Bears in Chicago. Chris Godwin and Leonard Fournette in the news. What do we know?
Well, Bruce Arians gave us a hint, right? He said he did not expect Chris Godwin to play and that Leonard Fournette had a shot. Well, so far, Chris Godwin not practicing, and Leonard Fournette is going to be a game-time decision. So I don't feel great about Leonard Fournette, if I'm being honest with you, just given his ankle issues of the past and the fact that it's going to come down to the wire with him. And hopefully you've already made plans for Chris Godwin, just knowing that he's going to be out for this game.
Okay, so Chris Godwin likely out for Thursday. It means more Scotty Miller, who we discussed in waivers yesterday. And Leonard Fournette, we shall see. Will be very, very interesting. Ronald Jones, as we talked about last week on this podcast, finally got a chance to play. And while he didn't score, he had 20 rushing attempts. Very good. Very
and
good.
Nine targets. Do you realize that? He only gets, this might be a record. I'll have to look this up, but he had 17 receiving yards on nine targets.
You know what?
That's unbelievable.
You know what's definitely happening, though, right?
What's happening?
Leonard Fournette's playing on Thursday night, and Ronald Jones will have one touch.
Stop it.
That's the way it works.
Don't do that to us,
but
Field.
That's the way it works.
I don't want that evil on me.
I mean,
I need Rojo in a couple leagues if Fournette doesn't play.
Keyshawn Vaughn looked pretty good.
Stop it, Mike Fleck. No! Both of you stop right now. It's Ronald Jones, and that's it.
He seems to have Ronald Jones on a roster,
I've got a decent amount of Ronald Jones in places where I've had a lot of running back injuries.
Why
so.
Did you do that?
Kalen Ballage is definitely getting
Stop
signed.
It. I hate you.
Definitely.
I hate you both.
You know
hey, I mean, right. Look, they're probably not going to have Shady McCoy. Yeah. They don't have Ken John Barner who got suspended four
right.
games. I don't
That's
know.
Right. I know. Oh, man. That's just how it works for the Bucs. All right. So all the injury updates, very useful there from Stefania. We got a bunch more news to get to. But let's talk about ranks this week. And we'll start with the quarterbacks. And I'm a little uneasy with my rank of Joe Burrow. He is 17th for me, 16th for Mike, and 14th for Daniel. Joe Burrow is coming off three straight games with at least 300 passing yards. The only rookie to ever do that, ever. He plays the Baltimore Ravens right now, Mike, and it's early in the season. So sometimes when you're assessing a sample size, it can be fool's gold. But the Chiefs lit up the Ravens. You know why? Patrick Mahomes is really, really good. Other than that, though, yep. Quarterbacks have been miserable against Baltimore this season. Joe Burrow, very bad. Dwayne Haskins, very bad. I'm forgetting who they played in week two, but that player, whoever it was very bad. I just know that they did a good job in week two.
Yes, you are correct.
Who did they play? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Okay, whatever.
I didn't write that down, so I don't know. I only know what I have in front of me.
So I know people are antsy this week to potentially start Joe Burrow. It's shiny object syndrome, right? I mean, he's a fun, exciting player. Cincinnati's got a good amount of skill around him so far, right? I mean, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon had a great week, great game last week. Can you talk yourself into potentially starting Joe Burrow this week?
Did you say Washington? I think that's...
I just like Washington.
Yeah. Did, okay. Anyway.
Bad podcasting here by me.
Cleveland, Washington. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. So to your point, I'll start with the Ravens defense here. Yeah. They faced the fifth most pass attempts, right? So teams are throwing against them. They're allowing 7.2 yards per attempt. That's 10th lowest in the league. And they've allowed the ninth most fantasy points. But like you said, almost all of that came against Patrick Mahomes. So that's an important nugget. He is playing well. He's completed almost 2/3 of his passes despite an above average depth of throw. I thought that was interesting. Certainly going forward makes me excited about what Burrow is going to bring to the table. But the key for him really in fantasy right now is volume. He's second in pass attempts and sixth in carries among quarterbacks. That's why he's in the top 10 right now in fantasy. But, you know, like we said, you combine those two things, the volume, the good play, but also this Ravens defense has been pretty good against quarterbacks aside of Mahomes, and I think he settles in as a mid-range option. So for me, he's QB 16. I don't want to start him unless I'm in a 16-team league.
I feel the same way. I'm excited about the player, and I certainly think they're going to be good weeks ahead, but I am very nervous about this matchup here for Joe Burrow. And I don't know that passing yards is frequently an indicator that I'm going to be looking at for why a quarterback should be started or not started, only because, you know, you play a bad defense, you're down from behind. You know, you could have a play where you throw the ball 8 yards and it goes, you know, 85 yards for a touchdown, right? I just think there are other things that I'd be looking at, and the matchup is certainly scary for me.
Deshaun Watson.
That's in the fourth quarter. Yes, yes. Good
there
answer.
It is.
And Deshaun wasn't great against them, so that's a really good quarterback that was not good against the Baltimore Ravens defense. Next one here, I think, is the most interesting quarterback start-sit question of the week. Daniel Jones, who plays the Cowboys, because the Cowboys have been the gift that keeps on giving defensively. They are so bad. They are so woeful. They're not getting any better anytime soon. They're making defensive adjustments that include cutting Brandon Carr, who I didn't think was really the problem. He was just one of many problems they have defensively. We came into this season with all sorts of optimism surrounding Daniel Jones. He has been bad so far. He was quarterback 28 last week against a Los Angeles Rams defense that has been solid, but he's also been bad in basically every game this season. I've got him 12th. You've got him 13th. Daniel's got him 17th. So Daniel may be the pragmatic one here, but the Cowboys have been so, so bad defensively, Mike. I don't know what the circumstances would be, but let's imagine a scenario where Cam Newton doesn't play again this week, and potentially there's some postponements. Potentially you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. Is Daniel Jones the guy that you are thinking about adding to your roster to be your fill-in quarterback?
I think so, and there's a few reasons. You laid a few of them out. Another thing is, you know, very poor start, right? Obviously, 5 interceptions, 3 fumbles, only 2 touchdowns so far. It's been really bad. In fact, the Giants have the fewest offensive touchdowns in the NFL, 3 in 4 games, which is unbelievable this far into the season of 3 offensive touchdowns. Yeah. But I will say this. They've played Pittsburgh, elite defense. Chicago, elite defense. 49ers, even with the injuries, have been playing at a very high level. And you mentioned the Rams. Their defense is playing better than expected. So that's really tough. That's really tough. Cowboys aren't tough. Fourth most fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks, as you mentioned, 11 touchdowns allowed, one interception. They're not forcing turnovers in addition to allowing a lot of production. And despite the fact that the efficiency has been poor, the scoring has been poor, Jones is getting a lot of volume. You know, much like Joe Burrow, seventh in dropbacks, eighth in carries at quarterback. And we've seen him play well in fantasy before, right? I mean, during his starts last season, he was number one in the NFL in passing touchdowns, actually averaged more fantasy points per game than Kyler Murray, right? So he was pretty good last year.
Yeah.
He's had a bad schedule. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt to some extent and consider firing him up against this defense.
I was going to say, I doubt anybody has been hanging on to Daniel Jones for the past 4 weeks. Like, no one's been trotting him back out there one, two, three, four in a row. But if for some reason you've been hanging on to him as your backup, or maybe he started in week one and then put him as your backup subsequently, if it does not happen this weekend, you can be out of the Daniel Jones
business. No question.
It may not happen at all this season. We're going to talk about running backs in just a moment. But first, Daniel tells us a little something about our friends from Geico.
How do you banish high rates on car insurance, Field?
Is there an answer to that?
You switch to Geico during Geico-ween. Bro!
Maniacal. I love it.
October is Geico's favorite time of the year, and Geico has been working even harder than ever to cast out high rates on car insurance and craft just the right coverage for you and your family. But here's the thing you may not know about Geico. They could also help you uncover more ways to save on the other things that are parked in your driveway, like your beloved motorcycle or your boat or even that home away from home, your RV. Geico could even help you save on homeowners and renters insurance. So visit geico.com today and you'll see firsthand that switching your insurance coverage doesn't have to be scary. The only thing that will haunt your nightmares is seeing just how much you could have saved if you had switched sooner. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Happy Geico-ween, everybody.
Well done, Daniel.
Thanks, buddy.
I do.
Yeah. All right.
Shell knows that between every tee-up, layup, and batter-up that you can't wait to catch up with your favorite podcast. So come to Shell and get three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Then save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gas again. And finally, snack up with in-store rewards to save even more at the pump. Time to wrap it up. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell. And engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. See full terms and conditions at FuelRewards.com. Time to get into some running back ranks. Just a reminder again, with the Lions and more importantly, the Packers on a bye, no Aaron Jones.
What do you mean more importantly?
Oh.
Hold on now.
No, because in my punter-only league, okay. J.K. Scott's been my least valuable player because they never punt in Green Bay.
Right.
So that's why.
That's fair.
It was nothing to do with...
In punter-only leagues, though, the Lions are absolutely crushing it.
They're really good. Yeah. They actually did find a nice punter this offseason.
Yeah.
No one cares about that. They did find a nice punter. Anyways, Stefania, we have a big injury. It's a big name who's coming off of an injury that I don't know how substantial it was, but to put him on IR, Le'Veon Bell. He is eligible to play in week 5. The Jets have not yet made a formal decision because they haven't had to. They return to the practice field today. I think if we see him out there on the practice field to give us an indication, do you expect to see him on the practice field?
He thinks he'll be ready to go in week 5. And so, you know, Le'Veon Bell thinks a lot of things, right? We hear about it through his social media. Remember, he said there was nothing wrong with his hamstrings in the preseason when apparently there was. Then an aggravation of that issue, whatever the issue was that he said didn't exist in week 1. And ever since then, we haven't seen him. So it's hard to know what to think. We haven't had much film of Le'Veon Bell this season, but there was some rumblings in the preseason that he just didn't look fantastic. He's got a chance to reverse that if he gets back out there this week, which it sounds like he has a chance to do.
Okay, that is news. I don't want to call it good news. I don't know. Like, it's the Jets' offense. All right, so I've got him at running back 20. You've got him at running back 23. Daniel has him at running back 17. So we're all in the same neighborhood and territory.
Yep.
This, to me, is less about Le'Veon Bell. This is more about the fact that the running back position is a wasteland right now. Like, there's like 4 guys I like at running back right now. Seriously, yeah, there's like 4.
I'm with you. Look, I'm fortunate that I checked this during the game before he got injured, but Le'Veon Bell was playing 100% of the snaps before he got hurt.
100.
100. That's more than 99. Less than 101. Yeah, 100. So there was talks that, like, with Frank Gore and, you know, LaMichael Perine, maybe he would play a little less. 100% of the snaps in week.
Wow.
So that's interesting to me. That makes me think that maybe just on volume alone, much like last season, that he can be a competent RB2 at some point. However, I don't know how much he's going to play this week, right? Coming off the injury, is he going to be 100% player? Is he going to be a 50%? Are they going to give Frank Gore 50
four
carries?
Now, right?
And their own four. We don't know really what they're going to do here. It is a good matchup, though. Arizona, eighth most fantasy points to running backs. Okay against Washington and Detroit. Terrible against the 49ers. And last week, of course, against Mike Davis and the Panthers. So that's why I'm at 23. I think if you have him, and again, you're probably missing guys with buys and injuries and everything else going on, he's a flex option, but I don't feel like you just have to jam him back in there if you have other good options.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I just don't know how many people have other really good options. And I'll be worried about him playing 100% of the snaps coming off of this injury. And again, I mentioned the 0-4 thing because at the beginning of the season, you can at least sell yourself on, hey, we might be frisky and competitive. The Jets finished 6-2 down the stretch last season. Maybe we can go 8-8 this year. 8-8 ain't going to happen. They might be lucky to go 2-14 this season.
Man, the New York teams. It's unbelievable.
New Jersey.
It might be the two worst teams.
New Jersey teams.
All right, New Jersey. Yeah, that's fair point. Yeah, good
the
point.
State of New York. Really, we got the Bills, baby. We're undefeated.
It's been a while, right? Yeah, the Bills are by far the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Man, all right, let's keep rolling here with the other side of this game, which is Kenyon Drake. And I just want to have Stefania remind us once more about what we've learned about Kenyon Drake on Sunday. Left the game late, and you're sitting there thinking to yourself, uh-oh. Another running back injury. But because it was so late in the game, I don't think the team ever had to issue a status update. What do we know about Kenyon Drake?
Well, we found out later that he just got the wind knocked out of him. And, you know, when he went down, we were saying that this is one of those things where you don't know if it's just the wind knocked out of you or something more serious, because he was clearly in some significant discomfort and then was escorted off the field. But good news, he was already working out on Tuesday, so expect Kenyon Drake to be fine for this week.
Right. That is good news right there for Kenyon Drake. But again, a complicated situation here, Mike. So I've got him outside my top 20 at 21 this week. You've got him at 18, Daniel at 19. Again, sort of all in that same territory. But the part that bothers me about Kenyon Drake this year is the usage, right? And you are much better at this stuff than I am. But I mentioned this a couple of days ago on the show. He played six games for the Cardinals last year. Six. He had 33 targets. I did a little math there. 5.5 targets a game.
Nailed it.
He's got 5 targets in 4 games this year. Now, he's caught all 5, which is good. But he's got 5 targets, Mike. Mm-hmm. He is an excellent pass-catching running back. The Cardinals were sort of the darling of the NFL in the first 2 weeks of the season, and now not so much. What do we make of Kenyon Drake's usage? And, you know, it's not our job to decide what plays are called. It's also not fair of us to try to figure out whether things will change because, again, not our information to figure out, right? Like, we don't, like, how are we supposed to know if Cliff Kingsbury is going to change his mind this week? But how disconcerting has his first quarter of the season been? And at what point does he move from, you know, borderline RB2 to potentially not in your lineup?
Well, it's very disconcerting for me, considering I took him and advised taking him around the 1-2 turn in most drafts. So it hurts. This reminds me a lot of Kerryon Johnson last season. You remember, we thought going into last season, okay, he's going into his second season. He's, you know, we saw a lot of passing game work in his rookie year, and then Theo Riddick was gone. We thought maybe he could catch 50, 60 footballs in that offense. And what'd they do? They used him like they're using Adrian Peterson now. He was getting 18 to 20 carries and almost no targets. And that's kind of what has happened out of nowhere with Kenyon Drake. So it's a really shocking development here. And obviously it's hurt a lot in fantasy. He's been under his head in the touchdown department. He is 7th in the NFL in carries, so he's getting a lot of rushing volume. That's the good news. Maybe he scores some touchdowns. Maybe the targets go up a little bit, but like you said, we can't count on that for sure. I will say this, though. Good matchup. This is our chance to really see if he can get going and the efficiency can match the volume. 7th most fantasy points to running backs, 8th most rushing yards allowed, and 5 touchdowns. That is 4th most. They've allowed 29-plus fantasy points to running backs each of the past 3 weeks. It's the 49ers, the Colts, and the Broncos. So maybe this is a week Drake gets going, but it's going to have to be on the ground, it seems like.
You know, one thing I would just want to say here, Mike, and I know that you weren't really being too self-deprecating there, but you advised him. You, only Mike Clay, suggested
only me.
Taking Kenyon Drake would be a worthwhile strategy going into the season. Listen, people, the whole industry did. We did. I did. Matthew did. Daniel did. Stefania did. The guy that, I don't know, security guy here at ESPN suggested.
Yes.
Well, everybody did, right? Like, that was a very reasonable, smart case to build based off how well he played last year and the fact that he was going to be the clear-cut guy in Arizona. They paid him $8.5 million to stay as a transition tag player when they could have easily let him go. It's not like they have a ton of cap flexibility. Arizona was committed to Kenyon Drake. It happens. So far, we are one quarter of the way into the season. It does not look great, but if the Cardinals keep losing, and if they lose on Sunday, we are in for major, major problems. Mm-hmm. They need to do some self-scouting, and I think Kenyon Drake getting the ball more in the passing game would be a good way to kickstart some offensive firepower. All right, two Chargers running backs that we're evaluating this week because of the fact that Austin Ekeler is out. And a lot of people continue to ask this, so I want to reiterate what I said yesterday. We outsource our questionable, doubtful, out IR designations to a company that helps us maintain a database of thousands of players. Keith Lipscomb's not at the time to go through every single player and, oh, okay, he's questionable, he's doubtful. It just doesn't work like that, okay? When Austin Ekeler is placed on IR, if he is placed on IR by the Chargers, he'll be IR eligible in your leagues. If he is ruled out for this week, you can also move him out of your lineups for this week to IR. But that's not how it works. I would be surprised if any fantasy platform works differently than that. But until he's placed on IR, he is not going to be IR eligible. Josh Kelly and Justin Jackson are the next men up in this backfield, Mike. And Josh Kelly seems to be the guy that will take over as the starter. But Justin Jackson has shades of Austin Ekeler in his game. Not nearly Austin Ekeler as a player, but there's some shades there as a pass catcher. How do you assess these two? Where do you rank them for this upcoming week?
Yeah, and Josh Kelly has gotten a lot of volume so far. He's actually 23rd in the league in touches among running backs, and that's with Austin Ekeler in the fold for most of that, of course. But remember, Jackson was out with an injury, right? So we saw him mixed in week one, and then he was actually just ahead of Kelly in touches, and then he got hurt. But you're right. Jackson is averaging almost 5 yards per carry in his career, also has 32 career targets. So I think he might be a decent player and is going to get some run. I also told you during the offseason, not super high in Kelly as a prospect. I wasn't. You know, we'll see how that develops over time. But I think this is important to point out, and this is what happened on Sunday. Ekeler went out on the third snap, so a decent sample for this game here. Kelly, 42 snaps. Jackson, 19. Kelly, 12 pass routes. 9 for Jackson. Very close. 9 carries for Kelly. 6 for Jackson. 3 targets for Kelly and 2 for Jackson. So it leaned toward Kelly, but not by a large margin. If Jackson comes out and is running well, he very well could take control of this backfield. And that's why I have Kelly 19th and Jackson 28th. It's pretty close. They're both borderline RB2s or flex options.
What we're always evaluating is a team's plan when you're adjusting within the course of a game could be different than your plan when you have a full week to size up how you want to use Josh Kelly versus Justin Jackson. But I'm with you. We are all with you in that Josh Kelly feels like a borderline RB2, and Justin Jackson feels like a potential flex play if you play in a deeper league, especially with PPR scoring.
By the way, Saints defense very good against the run. We've seen that so far this season, too. 6 lowest yards per catch, or 6 lowest yards per carry, 7th lowest yards per reception, 13th fewest fantasy points of running back. So a couple touchdowns mixed in, but they're very good against running backs.
All right. Generation Rising is brought to you by EA Sports NFL Madden 21 and the best running back in fantasy football. The very best was Joe Mixon in week 4. He had 42.1 fantasy points, 25 rushes, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns, 6 catches on 6 targets for 30 yards plus a touchdown. And the question everybody is wondering this week is how high does he rise in the ranks? Understanding, again, they're playing the Baltimore Ravens. Mike, I've got him at 12. You got him at 14. Daniel's got him at 12. Some people are probably saying, like, how could you not lock it in as an RB1 after last week? But this Ravens defense, again, to reiterate, they're no joke. So we'll be tougher sledding this week for Joe Mixon, we believe.
Yeah, no question. And there's reasons for optimism with Mixon, not only this week, but going forward here. There's also reason for concern. And, you know, the volume is great. No surprise here. Third at running back and carries and touches so far this season. Level of concern here. He was, as you mentioned, the number one scoring running back in week 1. His first 3 finishes were 49th, 27th, 34th. Okay, not what you wanted in this guy that you took at the round 1-2 turn. But here's what really gets me interested in Mixon going forward. 6 targets and ran a route on 59% of their pass plays on Sunday. Why is that important? Both are highest for him in a game since 2018.
Ooh, that
now, that's been a red flag. That's why I didn't really love Mixon in drafts this year, because we knew he wasn't going to be used in the passing game, and he wasn't weeks 1 through 3, but suddenly it's starting to ramp up in weeks 3 and now weeks 4. So I like that for sure. As you mentioned, though, tougher matchup. Ninth fewest fantasy points allowed to running backs this season for Baltimore. They've only allowed one rushing touchdown. They held the Browns running backs to 18 fantasy points in week 1. That's a pretty good feather on their cap. Excellent, considering what they have done. And most of the damage that they have allowed was in the passing game to the Chiefs and Washington. So it's really important that Mixon gets targets in this game. If he doesn't and they shut him down on the ground and he has 18 carries for 38 yards and no touchdowns, it's going to be a major dud. So I'm at RB14. He's an RB2, but not my favorite play in DFS for sure.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I had a dream 2 nights ago that the Bengals won the Super Bowl. So that could mean that maybe he repeats his RB1 status, like not just like top 10 RB, like the best running back in fantasy for week 5.
Who did they play in that game?
I don't remember. I think it was Arizona. The Jaguars, which would make no sense. So okay. Anyways.
That's no fun. I wanted to see if it would play out. So.
But if he finishes as the best RB in fantasy football this week, you guys can all thank me later. Group baskets are appreciated. So please send them to, just DM at Matthew Berry TMR on TikTok for more information. Let's move forward to pass catchers. And buys this week, again, include most notably the Lions, but also the Packers. So Devontae Adams, Big Bob Tonyan, Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, TJ Hockenson, all on buy this week. We're really going to the well here with this Bengals offense. So we're going to talk about Tyler Boyd here for a second, and I am crazy. I am talking about the possibility of Tyler Boyd as his number 16 wide receiver in fantasy this week, where Mike and Daniel both have him at 25. And I know where Mike is going to lean on. Mike is going to tell me, you mean you want to challenge Marlon Humphrey, he of $98.5 million wealth now? And I'm probably going to need to adjust my ranking because Tyler Boyd is facing off against Marlon Humphrey.
You were going to talk smack on Marlon Humphrey, and then you were like, you just talked yourself right out of it. That point.
Not a good idea by me.
You nailed it. I put suddenly up to wide receiver 4 in receptions and 15th in fantasy points, 8-plus targets in 3 straight games, but versus Marlon Humphrey. That's all I wrote down here, aside of mentioning that the Ravens defense also very good against receivers. Cleveland, Houston, Washington did very good against them. They're beat up by the Chiefs. Again, you have to adjust for that. Outliers happen. That's important, especially in small samples. They have faced the 7th most wide receiver targets, but they're mid-pack in fantasy points allowed. So they have been efficient on that side of the ball. And like you said, Marlon Humphrey is the slot corner, for now at least, for this Baltimore Ravens secondary. They like to shuffle guys around throughout the season based on injuries, but for now he's covering the slot. He's going to be on Boyd in this game. That's a tough challenge.
So I need to adjust my ranking, bottom line. Mike, very smart. You know all this stuff. I'm going to move him down a little bit, but still, usable, right? I mean, you don't want to avoid him entirely because the volume has been excellent. He's been their best pass catcher by far this year. I mean, he's been really, really good. He looks like the clear-cut wide receiver one, right?
No question. They've kind of shifted away from A.J. Green to more Tyler Boyd the past 2 weeks, which is great. And he may catch 8 balls for 56 yards and a touchdown, just based on how much he's targeted. It's very possible. As we talked about with Joe Burrow earlier, one of the highest volume passing games has been the Bengals so far.
They signed him to a 4-year, $32 or $36 million extension. It's going to be one of the best values. No doubt.
And remember, through like 2 years, he was a certified bust. He was a healthy scratch. In his second season in the NFL, it looked like he was done for, and now he's one of the better, more reliable receivers in the league.
Back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons for Tyler Boyd. He's on his way to a third right now. All right, so Odell Beckham Jr. went crazy last week. He was sensational. He was the wide receiver one for the week. That was awesome, which, like 3 years ago, you'd be like, oh, Odell, finishing number one as a wide receiver. Totally makes sense, right? Yeah. That has not been the case recently. Excuse me, as he had 38.4 fantasy points, including 3 touchdowns, 1 on a long reverse, 1 on a catch from Jarvis Landry, his wide receiver teammate, who threw an absolute dime.
Beautiful.
I love his tweet. I don't know if you guys saw this, but a day later, he was like, man, I throw one pass, and I feel like I just threw a 9-inning game, which is pretty funny. So, well done for Jarvis Landry. A big fan of Jarvis Landry myself. So, all right, I'm going to talk about the matchup and let you get into whether like everything you've seen from a fantasy perspective is jiving with what I'm about to bring to light. But coach speak is one of those things you got to be really careful with, Mike, because sometimes coaches say stuff and they proved, they're like almost lying through their teeth, right? But on Sunday morning, Fantasy Football Now, Sal Palantonio, Ed Werder was at the game between the Cowboys and the Browns, and he talked to Kevin Stefanski, and he talked about how not only was it a good opportunity, but it was incumbent upon them to get things going with Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. Like, the Browns recognize that even in a 2-1 start, the first time they're over 500 since 2014, they knew they needed to get those two guys going more. Yesterday during his press conference, I mean, it was Monday, I was watching his press conference when he announced that Nick Chubb was going to go to IR. He also said, hey, you know, like, I think it's really important that we get Odell the ball early and often. He's an outstanding player. I'm starting to buy into it a little bit. So I'm buying into the coach speak, which could prove to be a fool's errand. Now, give me the more pragmatic, like, here's what the fantasy numbers say, and here's why Field might be a moron take.
Yeah, this is, I'm not there yet. I'm not as optimistic as you are. I want to be, because
he's... Where's Matthew?
I know,
Matthew,
right?
Back. For the first time in my career, I'm asking for Matthew to come back.
Look, I want to be. The guy's super good at football. You like him. I mean, it's obviously important. Kevin Stefanski has been fantastic so far. Let's be totally honest. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
But there's obvious red flags here, whether it's this week or going forward. How about the first 3 weeks of the season, right?
Okay.
I mean, the plan just didn't become, let's get Odell Beckham the ball in week four, right? I mean, that's been the plan all offseason. His finish is 77th, 19th, 47th. Okay, so that sounds a lot like last season. In fact, last season in week two, he was the number three scoring fantasy receiver. Everything, if you drafted Beckham last year, you were like, all right, wide receiver three in week two, I'm sitting pretty here. He had zero other top 10 finishes last season, right? So a couple other things, 7.0 targets per game. So far, that's actually down from 8.3 last season. So his volume is down. Now, they might be more efficient touches. Yeah. Certainly, I get that. But overall, volume is down. He's 30th at wide receiver in receptions right now. He's 26th in yards, but he has four touchdowns, which has obviously bailed out him out a little bit. And short term, by the way, they're playing the Colts this week. The Colts are no worse than 5th in receptions, receiving yards, yards per reception, yards per target allowed to receivers. They've allowed a total of 5 passing touchdowns in 4 games. 3 of those were Gardner Minshew in week number 1. So I want to be excited here. We know how great of a player Odell Beckham can be in fantasy and real life, but he's not there yet. Needs more volume, and I need to see it longer, because we're going on, what are we going on, 20 games with the Browns now, and he has 2-3 good games? That's it.
Field.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't listening. I just decided to tune out for the past.
I wanted to do that too. When did Mike Clay become so mean about all the players we like? So all of a sudden,
yeah, I don't know
when.
Makes no
That's,
sense.
I'm
sorry. I tuned him out for 2 minutes. Did anything happen?
I play the
lock. I always lock it in.
I'm Buzz Killington.
Lock it in.
Okay, I always play the Buzz Killington role.
Always
I know this by now.
Yes, gotcha. That's accurate.
That's my
all
job.
Right,
here.
That's accurate.
Do I have to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll keep going. Justin Jefferson for the Seahawks.
Do you want me to repeat all that?
Yeah, I heard it. No, I'll give you the short version. Mike Clay, exclusive tweet. Odell, wide receiver one. Justin
Odell
Jefferson
Beckham
goes to play the Seahawks this weekend. And here's a full disclosure revelation right now. The note, which Kyle does an incredible job of building nightly. Kyle is the grinder of all grinders. He put it out, and we have a responsibility. If we want to change something on the note, we've got to do it by a certain time. I failed to update my ranking on Justin Jefferson in time. So what you'll see right now is that Justin Jefferson is at 36. Mike Clay and Daniel both have him at 27. See, here is the error of my ways, is that they play the Seahawks, and the Seahawks could not stop me, Daniel, Kyle, and Mike in a 4 wide receiver set. So I need to have Justin Jefferson higher in my ranks. Mike, now you can explain to the people just how good of a matchup it is.
It is a very good matchup. And also, I don't know if you've noticed, but Jefferson himself has been pretty good,
right?
The past couple of weeks, back-to-back 100-yard games. Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson, believe it or not, are both top 10 fantasy wide receivers over the past 2 weeks. They combined 64% target share, which is just an absurdly high number. Jefferson playing well, 80% catch rate, despite a 13.9 average depth of target. That means he's getting downfield and still is highly efficient, catching a lot, high percentage of his passes. He's averaging 17.4 yards per target, which isn't even close to sustainable. And actually, this is my real only concern with him in this low volume offense, is his targets so far are 3-3. This playing time went up, and it's 9-5, right? So he only has one high target game, something to keep in mind. But as you said, great matchup. Seahawks, most fantasy points allowed to receivers, most targets, receptions, yards. Wide receivers right now, just wide receivers, not tight ends, running backs, nothing, just wide receivers, averaging 24 catches for 336 yards per game against them. They'll both see a lot of Shaq Griffin in this game. He's allowing the most fantasy points in coverage this season. So
wow, he's a good player for them too. Like they believe he's a cornerstone player.
No question. A lot of guys we thought were good are allowing a ton of production this year. It's unbelievable how some of these defenses are getting lit up.
By the way, shout out Haley Burns, who's one of our great, who's part of the great production staff we have here at the 06010, who's adjusted my ranking to 29 to accurately reflect what I screwed up. But here's the problem, Haley, is that like you give me an inch and I might take a mile. So I will not do this again. One time, my bad. I screwed it up.
until the next guy he's an outlier on, and then back to the group.
No, because you know what? Here's what I'm doing. I want to. This is an important thing because you're going to say, "Are you an outlier on this next player we're talking about?" The answer is no. DJ Moore, I've got him at 31 in my wide receiver ranks. Mike Clay's got him at 21. Daniel's got him at 22. You know why? And I thought about this. I've got DJ Moore in timeout. DJ Moore's in timeout for me. And here's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to fire DJ Moore up for this weekend. I'm trying to get him ready to go off against the Atlanta Falcons because the Falcons are terrible on defense. They have just been miserable throughout the first 4 weeks of the season. We saw it last week. No Devontae Adams, no Alan Lazard, no problem for Aaron Rodgers. They have been carved and sliced and diced, and they also lost Demonte Casey, one of their starting safeties, to an Achilles tear on Monday night, which is terrible news for him. He's a really good player. So I want DJ Moore to get it going, and I have him ranked 31. Amongst my wide receivers. Now, he has been a grand disappointment this season. Make no mistake about it. Certainly relative to where he was drafted. I'm having a hard time. I want to see it to believe it. And maybe I'll give him some slack by the end of the week. But do you believe firmly this can be the breakout week for him?
Definitely. And you laid out plenty of the reasons on the other side of the field. Obviously, it's a great matchup against the Falcons. They've been toasted by Seattle, Dallas, and even the Chicago wide receivers. They were good against the Packers, against wide receivers on Monday night. But the Packers running backs and tight ends, I love this stat. 20 targets, 20 catches, 241 yards, 4 touchdowns. They didn't need their wide receivers in the game. They had 2 injuries with Lazard and Adams. They just decided they didn't have to throw to them. But obviously, they struggled very much in that secondary.
I believe I heard that was only the second time a quarterback has gone 100% in terms of completion percentage to running backs and wide receivers, like minimum of 17 targets.
Wow.
Who was the other quarterback to do it? This is the I'm turning the tables here on Kyle Soppy. I know we got to keep moving here, but Mike, you have 15 seconds to guess. The last quarterback to go 100% on targets to running backs and tight ends, minimum completion attempts. No.
Peyton Manning.
Cam Newton.
You guys are overthinking this one. You're thinking way too
logically.
Joe Flacco, baby.
Oh.
Let's go. Joe Flacco.
So it's Chris Herndon week. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm telling you right
now.
But anyway, just really quick nugget on Moore. 0 touchdowns, but he is 12th at wide receiver in targets, 16th in yardage. He has basically the same target share as last season, but his air yards are way up from last season. So I do think the volume is there, along with Robbie Anderson. Both of those guys, I think, can be fantasy starters going forward.
I love me some Robbie Anderson. He's been good so far this year. All right, wake up with Wendy's Breakfast. If you haven't tried it yet, Wendy's Breakfast menu is definitely something you don't want to sleep on. Pick from fan faves like our Breakfast Baconator, Honey Butter Chicken Biscuit, and Frosty Chino, or mix and match to make your own breakfast dream team. How about that for a morning win? Wendy's Breakfast. Spread the word at participating U.S. Wendy's.
You know, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against some obstacles, like lots of applicants, but difficulties finding the right ones for your job, or finding time to hire while running your business, plus trying to ensure workplace safety. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. First, when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it'll get sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hustles for you to find the people with the right experience for your job and invites them to apply. In fact, check this out. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. To try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, let's get into some strategy, and this strategy is brought to you by Wendy's Breakfast, a breakfast so good you'll want to tell people about it, someone about it specifically. So we wanted to sort of just bring this quickly to just an idea about, like, if you had a couple of pieces of how to approach a trade, some of the things that you are willing to consider, part of your mindset, how are you actually executing this trade? And so you asked for each of us, Daniel did, for each of us to contribute a couple of notes.
Yeah.
What I did was the notes that I presented, I had a feeling basically the first thoughts I had would be taken by somebody else. So I went, like, the notes that I sent were actually like 5 or 6 in terms of importance for me.
Sure.
So do you want me to go first or no?
You can go first, but you can pick the order that you want to introduce these in. How does that sound?
So here's some of the things, right?
Maybe we should go in order of the rundown, though. Maybe just like thinking out loud in my head.
Okay, that's a good idea. All right. So
a voice in your ear is telling you that?
Yeah. No,
your just, voice is in my head.
Here's all I'm saying.
Yeah, this is good. This is good. I'll make it work here. So the first step to making a trade is you got to be willing to make a trade. And what I mean by that is you can't focus only on winning the deal. Because if you're so focused on winning the deal, it's going to end up being a chemically imbalanced offer suggested by you. It just won't work. It's just not going to happen. And yes, I get it. Invariably, we'll look back on every trade, and in most cases, there will be a clear winner. But even the person that seems to win the trade at the time of the trade doesn't always win it. If you're looking to make a trade, do so because you have a clear need, and the person you're willing to trade with has that has a need that's dissimilar, and you guys can take your strengths and turn it into their strengths, because or vice versa. But I also mentioned there is, like, do not judge. So number two, do not judge the deal early on after it's completed. Give it time to grow like a flower, right? Like, it may look bad at the beginning. I'm sure there are trades, like, and I hate to, you know, injuries come up, right? I mean, players turn things around, right? Guys get much better. Maybe Daniel Jones will become much better of a player than he has been so far this season. Maybe the hot start for certain players will cool off. Maybe Stephon Diggs will, you know, cool off a little bit for the Buffalo Bills. It's going to take some time before you actually realize if the trade is a great one, a good one, or a bad one, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, we all fight that recency bias urge, right, with analyzing players. It happens all the time. So, and I think that's another important part of it, too, is, you know, just because a player had one bad week or they're off to, you know, the first 2 weeks are slow, don't feel like you just have to dump them, panic, and move on and undersell. And maybe that's in another point. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if you made a deal, there's a reason for it. You thought it through and you have to be patient.
There should be a graphic that's available at all times. Who was the leading five players at each position after this week, week four of 2019? Mm-hmm. And where do they finish at the end of the season? And I'm sure you would be surprised to see how many players don't keep it up or accelerate and become much better. All right, a few more of the nitty-gritty, and these are, I think, more to the point here. When making an offer, consider the other team's needs, right? So if you're trying to acquire a wide receiver from somebody, you may say, all right, well, they're dealing with Christian McCaffrey injury, and, you know, maybe they're thin there as it is. They're relying too much on Ronald Jones or something like that. Hey, I have a running back. Let me ship that running back to that person who has a wide receiver I'm interested in. Always send a message as to why it's a good deal for both of you. Now, I think the reality is that sometimes when you're dealing with other people in your league, you may be a much more experienced or advanced or successful fantasy player than them. So sometimes an explanation can be useful. Hey, I understand that, you know, you've been hurting recently at tight end. And as it turns out, I'm rostering, you know, I happen to have on my roster, not just, you know, Travis Kelce, but I took a late flyer on Jonnu Smith for a reason. Maybe he could really help you. In turn, I need your backup quarterback who could become my starting
quarterback. Yeah, there's some gamesmanship for sure. I mean, throwing out in there, try to convince him to take the deal. I mean, at the end of the day, you do. Let's be honest. You want to win the trade. I mean, that's the idea. You're trying to help them too because you want them to accept it. But yeah, a little convincing's okay.
I think there's a big
nothing
part.
Egregious.
There's a big part of that where it's like you're looking specifically at, like, if someone comes to me and says, "Hey, Daniel, here's why this trade makes sense for you and for me," and it's like I can see the whole picture and it doesn't feel like I'm just trying to get someone's trying to fleece me. Mm-hmm. I immediately approach the trade differently because it's like, all right, you actually put thought into this. You looked at my roster, like you said, you looked at my roster to see what I needed. All of that makes sense. So it's just like kind of like setting the table for like, it's just the response is going to be better rather than just blindly throwing something out there without any, you know, kind of context whatsoever.
Yeah. And sometimes if I need a specific position, like let's say I need a tight end badly, I'm just in bad shape, I'll go to the, you know, the ESPN players page, pick all players in the league and sort by like projected, you know, rostership or projected points or points scored so far and see if there's two, you know, maybe one team just happens to have Jonnu Smith and Travis Kelce or something, right? And you say, okay, well, they probably have a tight end to move. Now let me look at their roster, see if they, maybe they're short at receiver, I'm good at receiver, match made in heaven, we can make something happen. That's always it's quick, it's simple, and you're more likely to get an accept for sure.
A few other trade strategy points is don't overvalue your own players. You want to appropriately value your own players because if you overvalue them, that's the best way to never get a trade agreed to. You think about if you would make the trade offer if you were on the other side of the offer. That's a good strategy, because if you'd make it both ways, then it's probably a deal you should do.
That was mine. Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, Phil. But yeah, that's really important, because I'm guilty of that too. I think I'm very reasonable, but still you feel that urge to keep your players, because if you feel like, if I make this trade and it goes south, and why did I do that, right? Like, I just gave up I invested in these players and then I traded them away, and now it's my own fault. I'll feel better if I fail with the guys I drafted, right? And it's not a great strategy. So flip it around. Imagine those players are on your team and vice versa. Would you accept that trade? It's a good way to trick your brain into focusing on it objectively.
Last one here is, don't get mad online about offers you don't like. So tell me more about that one, Mike.
Yeah, well, look, I love to throw offers. That's just fun. It's a way to liven up a quiet league, you know, just throw some offers out once in a while.
Sure.
Keep it active. But sometimes people just get really offended if they don't like the deal. And sometimes they turn out to be perfectly reasonable deals. And I know we don't have a lot of time to get into some examples of that, but that drives me nuts. Man, people are just trying to have fun and trade. No one's trying to rip you up. Maybe some people are over time, but
Jeremy
for the
Lundblad.
Most part,
Mike is mad that I offered him Brett Riffin for Patrick Mahomes a couple days ago.
I was thinking
bad,
about it.
Mike. Sorry, I like Patrick Mahomes a lot.
I thought about it. I mean,
hey, here's some news. Mike Clay is back tomorrow.
Hey,
he's back tomorrow for a Thursday night preview. Also, wide receiver cornerback matchups and so much more, with a bunch of injury updates from Stefania, and hopefully some good news on the COVID-19 front. For Mike and Daniel and Stefania and the entire crew here at the 06010, I'm Field. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Peace out. 6010.